Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Almeen. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
A warm welcome to all our listeners. Today we have a show called A Window into the Fairy World. And I read from the beautiful calendar prepared by two of our hosts, our guests today, and it says, fairies inhabit the green world, animate clouds and winds. A fairy sparkles in the crystalline structure of rock and dances in the mists, hovering on water in the early morning. In every knothole in a tree trunk, in every windswept pattern on the beach, in the center of every flower, a fairy lets us see its face. All around us, in a rich and ever-changing, always moving kaleidoscope of shapes and colors and patterns, the fairies invite us to peek into the other world, to see them as they are, the vibrant energies that inhabit the molecules just slightly removed from our consensus of reality. Honor the 13th of November, 2006, a most extraordinary event happened in my life. I was prepared for this. I had been invited a few weeks earlier that myself and 9 other masters for a 1-week period would be able to walk between the worlds into the fairy realms, photographing them, learning their secrets, learning how they live, and seeing their world. The result of this is a book that was received but a week ago by us for shipping, called Aruba Firina, The Book of Fairy Magic, an extraordinary restoration of the ancient keys and knowledge of these beautiful beings that keep our world green and beautiful. All I was told in advance from the goddess herself is prepare yourself. A pure and holy gift will be given, fairy magic for humans to understand. The window will open up for but a week, and in 7 days the book must be complete. On the 13th of November you must begin. For 7 days the knowledge will pour in. Even the price was given to me by the goddess. This is really not my book. I was just a very, very honored hollow bone for this beautiful song from the fairies to come through. Fawn and fairy and elf delight in the ending of a dark and faithless night. The long night is over. The dawn has begun. On the earth, the goddess has come. The fairies that were taken during that week on snapshots of various cameras without any specific colored lenses is in the book Aruba Firina for you to view. It is truly groundbreaking for us at last to open these realms. I have a wonderful little story from a dear friend of mine, the Nagual and mystic Melanie, who lives in Texas. Melanie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I would love you to tell us when they, during the same time, because you and I have worked together for many years, down in Texas, as I received all this up in Toronto, tell us the story of how they contacted you.
Okay. It was most remarkable because it was the same time, Almeen. And it was in the dream time. I woke up, if you will, to an invitation by the fairies to enter their realm. Instantly, I was in their world. And I remember it was like with childlike amazement about their light. And I use light in 2 senses. One is, it was almost, but not yet quite, transparent light, a rapid wave-like frequency of the pulsing of their energy. I could see and feel. Like the color that stands out the most is like a beautiful sunshine yellow, and it almost glows. And yet, in the background, I was aware of more fairies, and they had kind of like pastel pinks and blues and greens, but all vibrating and pulsing and just happy is a good word to describe it. And at first glance, I remember they looked like the kind of textbook Peter Pan Tinkerbell fairies. And as I relaxed into the dream, they became more pulsing balls of energy and beautiful, like they were letting me see more deeply into their world.
And
the second sense of...
You know, the photographs show these colors.
Really?
Of the films we took, not one showed normal colors as we were photographing interdimensionally, exactly the colors you describe.
Really? Because I asked last night before I came on the show in my own heart and mind, what if there was a message that the fairies wanted to communicate on this show today. And what I heard was the words color, which would be light, and sound, surprised me, which would be frequency. That's what, you know, they're beyond our normal range of experience, just barely, as you've said. But that's what they wanted us, through me, to communicate, to share what they're about. It's like this very, to me, very deep bliss-like experience that's very pure and unencumbered. And the second sense of light relates to that I experienced with them. It's a feeling of total freedom, just unencumbered by the linear mind, and they're living in a place of beingness, yet active doingness. And there was a group consciousness in this silence of mind that was so flowing and fluid and seemingly very evolved in a community sense. I had an awareness that they were all working together and everyone was doing more or less what made their heart sing. And the funny part to me was there was a message, and it was like they had an awareness. I was all tied up in the business world and concerned about money, and they kept on going, "What is money?" And I tried to explain I needed money to get the things I needed and wanted in the world, and then they would shake their heads and go, "What is money?" And they're just baffled by this, and they just started laughing hysterically at my focus on such a funny, mundane thing that did not exist in their world. They just go, "Do what makes your heart sing." And I'm like, okay. And I really have taken the message to heart and re-examined my world because of this dream, but it was so beautiful to truly experience their world by that invitation that is so pure and light and frolicking and effective. I mean, it's like they had everything they needed. They didn't need money. They had everything. So I offer my gratitude to them for showing me that realm and allowing me to share it with others.
What a precious, precious experience, Master Melanie. I am so glad you shared this with us. We had 16 secrets given. And these were called actually 16 candles, and within each of them, which is a topic, some secrets were given. And some of this regards play.
Uh-huh.
They gave us the most beautiful information about play, you know, and work, actually. And in the work, for example, they say that if you work more than 12 hours, whatever you've worked starts to break down.
Uh-huh.
It not only breaks down the cells of the body, causing aging, but it also actually breaks down the fruits of your labor in dismantling the etheric template that you've created through your previous 12 hours of work. Can I share with you some of the secrets from play that they gave? It's so beautiful.
Okay.
They say, "Is it that you wish to excel? Then I exhort you to listen well. Play will help your accomplishments grow, for one promotes the other, you know. In other words, we can't just work and worry about money, because if we played, it would flow more effortlessly. The harder you play, the more you achieve. Where the other is not, the one cannot be." And then they say, "The wee folk want assistance from you. If you will help, here's what to do. Plants will grow wherever you play, but be consistent and play each day. And I want to read just one of these verses in their language so our listeners can hear that these verses are actually translations. Varshvi sklerechpa ulefpi varha. Pet pri u nanavish u klechva bara. Pelesnu haresva u reklechpi strauva. Vruspet unespi ulech klaura. And you know how everything pulses between poles, you live in that principle. Play is actually no exception. They say play is active, it is often thought. But the other half of play must be sought. As in all things, balance must be, for play to deliver its gifts to thee. Play must be active and passive as well. Comprehend this, and then its secrets I'll tell. Emotions, too, it will set free. And they say that the play, the blockages of mind will release. I thought that was so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And nature withers when ambition is blind. When work and strife is all we can find, the desire to revel must go hand in hand. Inner balance inevitably leads to restoring balance in the land. And in other words, exactly what they said, why do you work all the time? Why do you worry? And Melanie, didn't you find this beautiful, whimsical, childlike innocence in them?
Absolutely. Unmistakably. And it just is. It wasn't anything they were trying to do or anything I had to look for. It was pervasive throughout the energy of all that I experienced with them. Beautiful.
And you know, they say how important it is for a child to play in these secrets. And in this one secret that they told, our psychologists are familiar with it. But they say that children must play to develop their maps of inner and outer space. Please join us after this commercial break. Many thanks, Master Melanie. And when we return, we will speak to John Crawford and his beloved wife, Bridget Wills.
Elmine is a globally recognized mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover their personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Elmine as you're told to guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal path to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Elmine on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic. And log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Walking Between the Worlds with Elmine. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Elmine.
And at this time, we welcome back not only our listeners, but our two guests that are on the show today as well. John Curtis Crawford.
Good morning.
Good morning, John. And Bridget Wolf.
Hello there.
And I wanted to tell the folks just a little bit about you. John began as a puppeteer at the age of 12, and he has been working in the professional entertainment business, in the arts industry, most of his life. He has worked with Jim Henson's Muppets, creating various creatures like dinosaurs, aliens, and fanciful characters and habitats. And his work has won numerous awards, including one from the Cannes Film Festival for special effects. He has had a lifelong connection with the mystical, but it became very deep when he married his beautiful wife, Bridget Wolf. Bridget is not only a shaman, but a psychotherapist, and she writes the extraordinary stories that go with the beautiful fairy homes that John and Bridget produce. They live right here with me on the Oregon coast, and as Bridget said, a place that draws people that walk between the worlds. They live by the river on acres of woods and gardens filled with fairies and other folk who provide continuous inspiration for their beautiful fairy houses. If you wish to take a look at their work, please go to www.fairy woodland.com, and their phone number is 1-800-304-3795. And now, John and Bridget, please tell us a little bit about your interaction with the fairies. What a big thing to tell in just a minute.
Where in within the many years would you like us to?
I should rephrase the question. What amongst all of your experiences with the fairies gave you the most succinct insight into their beautiful, innocent, and playful nature?
Well, Bridget, why don't you talk a bit about who introduced you to the world of fairies?
Well, I think what has been most important for me is my beginning with the fairies, which was when I was a child. I grew up in Minnesota, and we lived very close to the Mississippi River. And I used to spend my time alone wandering along the river, and in the wild parts, I would stop and watch the river and listen. And I could hear in the bushes around me laughter and tinkly little voices. And I didn't have a name for them then, because that was a lot of years ago. And there wasn't as much awareness of the creatures of other worlds at that time. And so I didn't know whether they were fairies or what they were. All I knew was that there were absolutely presences, and that I could communicate with them. As I grew up, of course, I left those things, put those things aside, and threw myself into the regular world. But then in my shamanic training, the overwhelming experience for me was when I was initiated into the world of the little people by an African shaman named Elien at the bottom of Havasu Canyon in a crystal cave. And that transformed me forever.
Oh, what a beautiful experience to reconnect with them after the years.
Yes.
And now I wanted to ask you a little bit, John, about these houses.
Yes.
Because I've read your literature extensively that you left with me. It was a delight to meet both of you, though. And I wanted to know from you, the houses seem to be a gateway into their world.
Yes.
Can you talk about that, please?
Absolutely. You know, objects have power. And when you work with objects, you have the capacity to imbue those objects with your own psychic energy as well as more power if you assemble them out of the magical pieces. And one of the things that was in my early experience was working with masks. And some of the things that I learned had to do with the fact that there, with every mask, the intention is not to look like a lion, but to become a lion or whatever the element is that you're attempting to animate. And so when I began making fairy houses, for me it was the same kind of process of not making something that looked like a house, but something that was a true habitat of a living fairy. And the process was one of walking in the woods, on the beach, or wherever I happened to be, and feeling for the energy of the place, and asking the spirit world to talk to me, and then gradually assembling pieces that were somehow related but not necessarily attached, and introducing them to each other and carrying on kind of a dialogue with them that had to do with their becoming. And the intent was to hold very dear, very preciously the heart of the individual elements as I found them, and to keep that alive so that when the house was completed, it carried that same life force within it.
And I noticed that your materials come from many, many different holy sites where there's powerful energy for each little house.
Yes, absolutely.
What a labor of love.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. You know, I like Bridget, in my early childhood, assuaged the loneliness that I felt wandering the wild places, in the desert and in the mountains. And in many regards, there's a mountain that raised me, and there's a Jeffrey Pine that was my uncle, and so forth, you know. I've been walking around with a pocket full of rocks since I was 10. And what's happened with this is that I've been, with malice of forethought, collected, malice is the wrong word, I realize, sands from all over. There are sands in the matrix that I make the houses. I should explain that I build the houses in a bed of sand using twigs that I've collected as a form. And I scatter stones within the twigs, and then that's back poured with porcelain. And when you stand the walls up, the part that was down in the sand becomes the front of the house.
Also, it's covered with sand, so it has that texture.
Yeah, and all the materials are real texture, real materials. There's nothing artificial about it or painted or whatever. The shingles on the roofs are all hand split shake shingles and so forth. And the sand that I work in, I've been accumulating now for almost 10 years. And the first house that I made has in it some of the same sands that are in the last house that I built, which was 951.
My goodness. You know, when I saw your fairy homes, John, I am not familiar with you and Bridget other than by reputation. Had not met you before, but it was when I saw your work jointly as a couple and the exquisite homes that I knew it was the real thing. In fact, those were my words to my office. Please get them on the show. They're the real thing. And how I knew that is during that week of which I spoke, in which I was allowed into the fairy world to film them, to get their stories, to get their languages, and some of their history and secrets. I was told that before a specific body of information could be given, I had to solve a mystery. I had to find a specific secret. And I actually went through the fairy world, through their homes, through their different little villages. And when I saw your homes, I knew that you were in true communication with them. But tell our listeners a little bit about listening to fairies. Because you said something when you were here that I was very impressed with, and that is about the silence of the mind, something that has been my absolute lifelong quest to produce in others and in myself as a teacher. And how do you get silent enough to hear these exquisite little beings?
In order to explain that, I have to tell you I'll give you a short version of what is rather a long story. But basically, Bridget and I were out walking on our land one day when we had newly arrived here, and we found in a tangle a path, and we thought, wow, this has fairy feel to it. This has fairy energy. Let's follow it. They seem to be inviting us in. And so we followed it, and we came to a place where the path took twists and turns, and then there was a place where there were two branches, rather purposefully placed, making an X across the path. And we said to one another, it doesn't feel like they want us to go beyond this point, does it? And we agreed that it wasn't, and so we turned around and began to leave. And as we turned, right where we had just moved, there was a striped racer that was lying very still, but moving exquisitely, just so smoothly, through the entire length of its body. And it was almost like trying to determine whether the hands on a clock were moving. It was so slow. And she said, my name is, and I thought she said Sybil. And I said, did you say Sybil? And she kind of laughed. And she said, well, that's okay. You were given a test to see whether you would follow our direction, and you've passed the test. And Bridget and I, having both heard this, looked at one another and looked back, and she was gone.
Oh,
just that
goodness.
Quickly. And the next night, in the dream space, she returned and explained to me about how snake language works, which is probably more of this story than there is time for. But the night after that, and I should say that she taught me that her name is actually pronounced Saha, and I can only approximate her language because her language includes sound, taste, smell, vibrations from the earth, and so forth, because they're basically without ears. So, at any rate, the next night she came back to me, and she woke me up at some ungodly hour, like 3 o'clock in the morning or something, and said, Indigo. Indigo is not a color that I think about a lot, and it just kept rattling around in my head, and I was compelled to get up and go down to the computer and go looking for the color indigo, because I was just obsessed with it. In the process of calling that up on the screen, I inadvertently clicked on a greeting card program that had been dropped on my desktop for no particular reason, and it was, as it came up, it was an indigo bunting.
Which is a bird.
Which is a real bird. And the bird said, if you follow the course of indigo and you remember the colors red and green, you won't get lost. And then they said, fill the screen with indigo, which I did. And the bird's image was still up on my screen. It was really funny. So there was this indigo around the bird. And I made a red dot and a green dot, and they stared at that for quite a while. And then they said, indigo is a gateway that leads to the quietness of mind that allows us all to hear the muted voices calling from across the boundaries of time and space. And it is the entrance to the pathway that leads to the place of no thought and no time. And when the color indigo turns to white, then you will know that you're on the interior of the space, the interior of the experience, and you will not hear your own chatter internally, but allow the voices to come in.
Oh my gosh, what a wonderful tool. Thank you, John. And when we come back, Bridget, if you'll tell us how we can see fairies and the best way to focus our eyes.
I'll be happy to.
The book Journey to the Heart of God, Mystical Keys to Immortal Mastery. After 3 months of intense physical preparation, in January 2004, Almian experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for more than the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like the automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it is transcribed. Few who have entered into God consciousness leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of the Immortal Master, in addition to continued function among the masses. But as a Toltec, Nagua, and seer, Almian's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. It's an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. These sacred messages claim the true identity of mankind as life begins of creation and the way shows back to the heart of God. Within this book, some of the mysteries of the cosmos that have plagued seers for eons have been solved for the first time. Never before in the history of any mystery schools have such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the destiny of man. With every fiber of our beings and in the depth of our heart's truth, no matter how profound, can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. To receive a copy of this book, premium CDs, online magazine, workshop, or lecture downloads, go to www.alminespiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016. You've been walking between the worlds with Al Mean. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Al Mean.
Welcome back to John and Bridget. And now we will ask them to please explain to our listeners what is the best way to see interdimensionally and detect the presence of fairies.
Well, besides learning how to quiet your mind, which you've had John talking about before, there's a great deal to do with perception and expectation, which, by the way, I was delighted to find in your book, that there's a lot of discussion about how we have forgotten to perceive in those other realms. For me, what has worked best. I could always hear the fairies, but I couldn't see them because my eyes were too formed to the forms of this world, if you will. And what taught me how to see them were trees. As I, in my own spiritual path, began to want to know trees, I would sit with a tree and examine it very closely, like you would a beloved person, to see every line in the face and every shape of the body. And in doing so, I would find places where in the tree there was a particular swirl around a knothole, perhaps. And I'd focus on that, and as I allowed myself to simply tune into the tree in this way, all of a sudden there'd be a face. And I began to understand that these were the spirit keepers of the trees, which who were fairies. And that was the beginning for me. And I think each person has to kind of find their own way into the fairy world. And I think that for most people, that is somehow through the natural world in some way, that there's a stone or there's a particular shape in the mists or a knothole in a tree or something that is the guide into that world to trick the mind, if you will, back into the larger perception that it's capable of.
Yeah, I would just add that oftentimes you'll look at the shapes of the leaf patterns in a tree and see a face and have the sense that the tree is trying to say something to you. And if you lend that the courtesy of reality and veracity and say, yes, that really is a face and it really is trying to talk to me, even though it's like a still frame, an amazing dialogue follows. And by eliminating your sense of expectation as to what dialogue should feel like or look like or sound like, you begin to hear a whole lot more going on around you than you otherwise would.
And I notice on your website, John and Bridget, that you speak about the soft focus of the eyes, which is so important in seeing interdimensionally. And if I may just read a little bit from there for the listeners. Fairies are most easily seen when you don't look directly at them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, be very quiet, both inside and out. It may help if you soft focus your eyes. Look straight ahead and concentrate on your peripheral vision. If you detect movement, resist temptation to look directly. When you sense a fairy presence, a friendly greeting is appropriate. And I might just add, the photographs that are in the Arupa Firina book that has just come out, the book of fairy magic that I've written with their assistance, the images in there are very helpful because, for example, some of the fairies are the size of, say, a tennis ball in the ball of light that is around them. And then there are very teeny tiny ones, and they often fly in formation. The photographs in the book will show them to you, but then when you see these little balls of information flying, in their words, speedy quick, that's what they call it, speedy quick, you know what you're looking at. The little tiny fairies, I would have been fooled had I not seen them before as part of this week on the films. They've shown up, but I would not have known what I was looking at. Tell us a little bit about what fairies do in the natural world. How do they contribute?
Well, they are, as far as I know, they are the energy that keeps things alive, that allows the cosmic life force to flow through everything on our planet and everything in other realms as well. They're the conduit, if you will, that through which the energy can flow into the physical manifestation. Like a tree is an idea and it's a reality, but our minds have made it a reality. And in order to transition the life force from the cosmos into the solid object that we call tree, there's a conduit necessary, and the fairies act in that way. It's my experience of them, John.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like a quantum tangle. You know, a quantum being the smallest possible particle of energy. And they speak in that language where one particle of reality, one particle of experience, I should say, turns, and another one disconnected from it turns as well. And the fairy energy is what reminds us of the connection between the two things that operate independently but jointly. And the whole sense of being is we're reminded by the fairies that we're alive and what that means.
I personally think that if it weren't for the existence of the fairies, we wouldn't have green growing things.
No, we wouldn't, would we?
Mm-hmm. No. It wouldn't. Hard to believe, but it's true.
In fact, their functions are multiple. Example, they have drain fairies. Hmm. And I have a story in Secret of the Hidden Realms, Mystical Keys to the Unseen Worlds, about an event that happened in my house. I noticed that sometimes my pipes were stinky and sometimes they weren't. And I called plumbers out. There was nothing wrong with my plumbing. Well, a drain fairy had moved into the house and at times was cleaning the dirty pipes. I had a group of little elves in the house and they told me, "We're going to find you a wonderful treasure and make you very, very rich." I said, "Okay." So 14 days and many little sore feet later, they came back with a bead necklace that they had picked up that some child somewhere had dropped. But this was their treasure to me, and they dropped it down the drain, and I woke up in the middle of the night with screaming little voices, "Help, help, help." They had fallen down the drain, and the drain fairy inside the drain had been, for eons, they were at animosity with the Elfin Kingdom. But in this instance, they cooperated per my request. They were all my friends, per my request, and the drain fairy helped the elves with their necklace. Never was retrieved. That the little beads went down the drain too deeply. But they helped them out, and only one shoe was lost. But they, to even be cleaning drains, isn't that amazing?
That's wonderful. You know, I think that part of what the fairies do for us is they remind us that we have a sense of humor.
Oh,
they keep
yes.
that alive in us.
I was given an instruction by the goddess at one point that there was a barrier that I had to break for further evolution that had to be done with laughter. And that was not my forte. And I, having spent years in silence and deepness of thought, laughter was not quite my strong suit. I had hundreds of little fairies come. They showed me their fannies, they made faces, they threw each other down on the ground and tickled each other and laughed and laughed and laughed. And it was so contagious that some hours of laughter later, I managed to break that barrier. Thank you for joining us, John and Bridget. Please go to their website and you will learn more about them on www.fairywoodland.com. Thank you again.
And thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Elmeen is a globally recognized mystic, seer, healer, and teacher of God consciousness. Her students, masters, discover their personal power by shedding layers of social conditioning while attaining the power of forgiveness, silence, and self-reliance. Explore with Elmeen as you're told to guide the mysteries of the cosmos through her series of CDs, books, online magazine, seminars, and workshops. Discover your own personal path to manifestation, ascendancy, and enlightenment by visiting Elmeen on the web at www.spiritualjourneys.com. That's www.spiritualjourneys.com. Reclaim your right to live a life of mystery and magic. Log on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. You've been walking between the worlds with Elmeen. For more information on your own spiritual journey, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Now back to Elmeen.
Welcome back to our listeners. And in this segment, I would like to explain why the extraordinary event occurred in November in which the fairy realms opened up and allowed us to photograph them and receive some of their secrets and informations, and indeed some of their languages, which is also written in the book Aruba Firina, the Book of Fairy Magic. You see, for eons, we have known in cultures and fairy tales and folk legends that there is, in fact, something like fairies. We have found it all the way from China to the Incas to Egypt. Everywhere they have been depicted in art or in some story kept alive. But as the consciousness of the planet fell, a lot of forgetfulness came upon man. And as they became more and more cerebral, they ceased to interact with these beautiful, beautiful little beings. Many of the ancient Mayas and other indigenous people opposed reading and writing, because they knew that words or symbols could lull man into thinking he knew something because he'd named it. With a word or symbol representing an object, such as a specific flower, its essence was no longer felt through the heart. In other words, that real world lying behind form was no longer accessed. In this way, the non-cognitive information of the universe around him became unavailable as man slowly sank into a world of logic and reason. With this shift, 9/10 of his reality disappeared as he lost the right brain-oriented tools to discern and communicate with it. Fairies, pixies, and other beings of the magic kingdom, without whom the earth would not flourish, became relegated to these realms of myth and fiction. As centuries pass, they continue to fade ever further across the horizon of human perception. But because we have changed doesn't mean they have ceased to be. As awareness on the planet rises to the levels from which it sank, more and more of us are once again able to communicate with the beings of these magic kingdoms. finding them, delighted to befriend us. Why the 13th of November was so very, very important is that as of the end of October, large groups of fairies came from other planetary systems. The first groups that came in, they were rather large fairies, as the photographs show in the book Aruba Firina. These fairies came from Antares. And each group of fairies, they were followed by the Pleiades. For instance, we had them from the star system of Lyra. We had them from Arcturus. They came in from Venus, and so forth. Each of these groups brought with them a gem. And now I will share with you, in their words, what they had guarded and why groups of fairies from these other planetary systems gathered back on Earth to reveal their secrets. They say, "You thought the Earth in Antares began. Partially true, but you misunderstand. The Earth was by Mother, the holy goddess that formed everything, firstly formed, in beauty arrayed, magnificently adorned. Seven star systems around her lay. Of each she was part, one could rightly say. Each held a chakra like a colored lens, reflecting their light like a precious gem." In other words, they came in from seven star systems that at one point in the far distant past of the Earth was around her like a necklace. And they held, each of the star systems held one of the chakras, or power centers of the cosmos. And when the ages of darkness began, Mother placed the codes of creation of these chakras into a precious gem. And the precious gems were guarded by the fairy realms through their powerful magic. As the light shone, fueled by her love, more stars formed below and above. The Earth is thus the Ancient One. It was from here that life had begun. She was larger than this Earth that we see. She was larger by far, in fact, times three. As Tiamat, or Eternal Mother, was the Earth known. Also because she was the goddess's home. But then began an awful age of separation and a dissension phase, when kings decided to dominate, light distorted and the planets pushed away. In that age of opposite light repelled, they could not stay, as you can tell. The chakras they carried, sacred and true, were carried with them and flew away too. Mother removed from these centers of light the codes of creation and sealed them tight in the heart of a gem hidden within each of the star systems. And now begins their sacred return by those who have earned, by guarding these gems, the right to return. Fairies they are who kept them safe. The ones who are gathering in the hidden place now unify the chakras into one. The reign of the goddess has begun. We were actually fortunate enough to film these gems as they returned. In fact, the hand of Thoth held out one of the gems outside our 10th-story window in a hotel in downtown Toronto where we met for this event. And the masters and I were able to see in photographs taken these gems. And through the week that we were there, one by one, they were placed in a formed crown, becoming the gems in the goddess's crown. We have a photograph of them placing the crown on my head before it was fully formed, and as it was more fully formed, two of the masters standing on either side of this glorious crown of Mother, carrying the gems brought back by these fairy groups, and once again restored as the chakras of the cosmos opened up for fuller light and consciousness. Now, they speak of the sacred gathering, the sacred place that they gathered. And what that was as the fairies restored their gems to Mother and they were placed in her crown, they went to a large cave in the crust of the Earth, where they gathered all seven groups from the seven different planetary systems. And as they gathered there, once again, they united into a fairy kingdom here on Earth. In fact, they gave us a most extraordinary calendar. I spent all night doing this calendar, and when it was completed, noticed that it formed a Fibonacci spiral. And the calendar tells us at different times of the day the heights at which fairies fly. There are times when the frequencies are conducive to their flying more closely to the earth, and at other times they would be higher. And this calendar maps out exactly when you would know to find them and where at what height. I want to share with you the secrets that the Andromedan fairies brought, and those are the teeny tiny little fairies that concerns work. Because in our first section of this show today, we spoke with the Nagual, the master, Melanie from Texas, and she said about how they are amazed at how we strive just to earn a living. Because for them, all work is play. And here are the secrets. Work. First it builds up, then it tears down, for it is based on a concept profound that all that goes out must also come in. Everything pulses without and within. After 12 hours of work that you've done, a time of destructuring must be begun. If not, the work you have done falls apart. Then decay in the cells of your body will start. In other words, there must be a time of 12 hours of rest, 12 hours of work. They are advocating that life be lived as they do, with joy, with gladness, in ecstasy, and with play, even as we work. We are delighted to have shared this information with you this day, and for the guests that have come upon the show to speak with you about their experiences. Next week, please join us for the holy of holies of all these programs. Beyond mortal boundaries, God's among us. You will be able to hear those that have achieved the exalted states of Godhood. Thank you for joining us.